But you have to think really carefully when it's being recorded, don't you? You know, just in case it's, you say anything incriminating. So it's over 10 years since we left this circuit, the family line. And preparing for today has forced me to look back over the last decade, to think about the journey that that we've been on as a family, to consider how God might have used us for his purposes during that time, to think about my personal discipleship and ministry and how that's changed or adapted, and then to wonder what the next 10 years might be like. And I wonder if this is an opportunity for you here to do the same. That our being here today provides you with an opportunity to reflect on the last 10 years. The journey that you've been on individually and collectively as God's church in this place. To consider how God has used you for his purposes. To think about your own personal discipleship and ministry and how that may have changed or adapted over time. And to perhaps wonder how the next 10 years, what it might bring for the congregation here at Balegate. And I honestly wish I had longer to explore these themes with you this morning. But as I said earlier, you've all got homes to go to, and we've got the promise of Sunday lunch at Pat and Brian's, so we'll move it on. So what I'd like to do is just share a little bit with you of what we've been up to over the last 10 years, where we've been. Share a little bit about the nature of chaplaincy and what that looks like, particularly in the RAF, and relate that then to the Bible story that we've just heard, because for me that the story has many parallels with chaplaincy. So a little canter, if you like, through the last decade for Family Brown. So you'll remember just over 10 years ago, we left this circuit, and people often say to me, so Ian, when are you going to come back to Methodist ministry? Well, I never left. So I'm stationed by the Methodist Church into the RAF to be a chaplain on their behalf. So I still fall under the discipline, the authority of the Methodist Church, and I'm kind of loaned out to the RAF as a chaplain. And so from here, started life at Cranwell. So RAF Cranwell. Anybody who visited there, you'll know that that's, I mean, anybody who's been through it will know that you often get a little twitch as you think about the time you have there. But we go through the full officer selection process, there's a training process for people like chaplains and dentists and doctors and lawyers, and you go through that sort of training side of things. It used to be called the Vicars and Tarts course, but they changed that because it wasn't appropriate. But the idea is that you receive the same training that everybody else does so that you can be credible in the workplace. Hugely important. And then we were sent from Cranwell over to Marham, RAF Marham, which was at the time the home of the Tornado GR4. No longer in service, that one. That's been replaced now by the F-35, our shiny new aircraft that you'll find at RAF Marham. So we spent some time at Marham, and we loved it. It was quite a transition to go from circuit ministry into that environment, and it took us a while to get our heads around it, but we thoroughly enjoyed it. People loved us into the community, we loved them, and so the ministry began. From Marham, I went up to Bulmer in the northeast, just to in Northumberland, to spend some time there. And that's where they control and police the UK skies from a bunker that's underneath that secret building there. Pretend you've not seen it. It's not that secret. And then the next one. And then we went from there to RAF Leeming in North Yorkshire, and we lived at Leeming for a couple of years. A wonderful time, a great place, tucked in between the moors and the dales. They fly the Hawk there. There are lots of people involved in communications engineering there, and a lovely sense of community. And for us, we look back and think they were our best times, actually. Becky was working in the local school. The children were just at the right age to fully appreciate the freedom of an Air Force base. All the community lived behind the wire because of the location, and it gave us a wonderful opportunity for ministry, and we thoroughly enjoyed that. Whilst I was there, next slide, I got the opportunity. Next slide, are we there? No? Is it frozen? Or have you gone to sleep, Brian? while I was there, I had the opportunity to fly in one of those, and it was great fun. Really good. A super, super experience, especially the moment where we were flying. I think we were flying over towards Newcastle, and the pilot, Crazy Dan, it said on his badge. I wasn't too sure when I got in with Crazy Dan. Crazy Dan said, right, Ian, if you just feel down to the left, you'll feel the throttle in front of you. You've got the stick. Right, you now have control of the aircraft. So I had a go, and it's brilliant. It's not that difficult. So I don't know why they go on about it all the time. So I had an opportunity to fly back. The only sad thing about that was I had to do the walk of shame when we landed because I had a sick bag with me. We'd been doing some loop the loops and all sorts. It's not fun. And then so from Leeming, we don't really need the pictures, we're okay. From Leeming, we were then... whilst I was at Leeming, I then spent some time out in Afghanistan, serving out there with the troops. On the ground in the Kandahar province particularly, but some travelling around. And then when I got back from there, we were then posted to RAF Wittering, which is down, if you've driven down the A1 and you see that Harrier on the side of the road, just south of Stamford, that's where we were for a couple of years. And that's a sort of a logistics hub. So all the non-sexy elements of the Air Force live there, but they do incredible work. They're always away from home. And a fascinating place, and we enjoyed that too. Don't worry too much if it won't come up. From Wittering, I was then posted to Coningsby, RAF Coningsby. While I was at Wittering as well, I went out to the Falkland Islands for about four and a half months as well to be the chaplain down there. And then from Wittering, we were sent to Coningsby, and that's the home of the typhoon, so they have what's called the quick reaction alert aircraft ready to take off at a moment's notice should anything untoward happen in the skies above us. But also at the time as well, they were preparing to go out to work from Cyprus out towards northern Iraq and Syria. And whilst I was there, I was then sent away so we need to move on. That's still Afghanistan. Keep going. Yeah, that's Wittering. There's the Falkland Islands, penguins, that's pretty much the Falkland Islands. I mean, if you don't need to go now, you've seen that. So Coningsby, and then I was sent out to what was called, it still is, Operation Shader, which is the UK forces' work towards trying to push ISIS back. And so I was spent some time in Cyprus as part of that, but most of my time was travelling forward wherever we had people in different locations scattered around the Middle East, scattered around Iraq and into Syria. My job was to make sure I could get there to check they were okay. So it was a really interesting, and that particular operation involved most of the aircraft that we have in the RAF. So this is me out there just visiting. These are Royal Engineers who are teaching Peshmerga forces actually to look for IEDs, but that's a different conversation we can have separately. And then move on. This was a group. So these guys were from a village. They were Christians. They were from a village where ISIS had come in and wiped through their village. These and their families had escaped, and some terrible atrocities happened in their village. So they were being trained up by our troops to go and to defend their village in the hope that other more trained forces would be able to take it back for them. And I had a lovely opportunity to pray with them, to read a psalm to them as they were training. And you can't really tell from that photograph, but these were just ordinary men who cared about their family and where they lived. I found it really humbling. Moving on. We had one person in Jerusalem, so I needed to go and visit them, obviously, and spent a couple of days just looking at the holy sites while I was there, which was wonderful. So looking down over Jerusalem there. This is the Sea of Galilee from Capernaum, And so two things come to mind with this, like the calming of the storm. It was obviously a quiet day. But also, I had a business idea. If anybody wants to come in with me, get a Perspex box made up, stick it on there in the water, and then charge people maybe a tenner at a time to have their photograph taken as if they're walking on the water. What do you think? So if anybody wants to come in, I'm on that one. So next one. This was me, Remembrance Sunday, back in 2016 in Baghdad. This is the British Embassy in Baghdad, and we held the service of remembrance there. And this guy here with the white robes on, he's the first Iraqi-born Anglican priest who lives and works in Baghdad. You may have heard of the Vicar of Baghdad. Well, he took over from the Vicar of Baghdad, whose name I can't remember at the moment, Andrew... Is it? White. Is it White? I think it might be White, actually. And he's an amazing man. Works a lot between Sunni and Shia groups, trying to bring people together, but as well as spreading the gospel throughout Iraq. A fascinating man. And we spent a good couple of hours together. In fact, the preaching scarf he's wearing there, he gave to me, and I treasure it. That was a lovely thing. And then moving on, I then went... So when I came back from there, I was posted then into Air Command to Chaplaincy Headquarters, where I spent 2 years working on strategy and policy for RAF Chaplaincy. It's done now. I've done it 2 years, but it was fascinating and challenging. Very long hours, but some significant things we dealt with over that period of time. But I did enjoy it in some respects. Not least that during that time where there was RAF 100, the centenary celebrations, and I was able to get fully involved with all of that, helping to plan the service at Westminster Abbey. And that was the day, July last year, July the 10th last year. Becky, I think from the moment we woke up to the moment we went to bed, drank nothing other than champagne in various locations, including Buckingham Palace. It was lovely, she says. You know, what can I say? So that was Air Command, and then I was posted from there to RAF Waddington, where we are now, and I arrived in April. And RAF Waddington, as many of you will know, is the home of the I-Star Force. They're the eyes and ears in the sky, basically. So they do a lot of stuff that we don't need to know about, but very important work. And a mixture of airframes, some of them are really old and ugly, some of them are really new. Most of them, whatever they look like on the outside, have got really interesting stuff going on the inside. And one of the major outputs of RAF Waddington is the bottom corner there, the what's called the Reaper, which is an unmanned system. So as we share together now, there are people sitting in a box at Waddington flying one of those somewhere in the world, probably over Syria. And when they finish work this evening at about 7 o'clock, they'll hand over to their sister squadron in the United States, who will take over the flying of it and do the same there. So they're flying operations from Waddington throughout the year, and 365 days of the year, which brings some challenges. And sometimes their job is not very pleasant. They're incredibly professional, but it doesn't come without its challenges. So that's where we are. Is that the last photograph, I think, Brian? So that leads us to our Bible story. So just a bit of a canter through. So that's the last 10 years, where we've been. We've moved around a lot. A few years ago, when I was posted to Coningsby, we bought a house in Dunstan and put roots down there. So then I started to move around as the family stayed put. But Emily's just started her A-level, so when she's finished, we're back on the available for travel again. But we've just had a bit of a respite for a few years where they've been able to put roots down for a short period. But a fascinating journey, and we've enjoyed it. So that brings us to our Bible reading today. We've got the story of a dying girl and a sick woman. And I believe it speaks into chaplaincy. Because what do chaplains get involved in? Well, we get involved in all sorts. The motto of the chaplain's branch is to serve, not to be served. So we do a lot of visiting people at work. That's bread and butter to us. We provide pastoral support. And you may be surprised to know just how many people come and seek us out. Daily, there are people. Sometimes there are queues of people waiting. And they just want to sit down. They want to share what's what's on their hearts, what's heavy in their hearts, and they recognise, although they may not be people of faith, they recognise that there's something in chaplaincy that might be able to offer them some comfort. And so it's a huge privilege, and that's a large part of what we do. So we care for people, we provide a safe space and a listening ear, and we speak God's wisdom to them. We conduct funerals and baptisms. We've got a church at Waddington that runs on a Sunday. It's a fairly small congregation, but they're a faithful bunch. You can imagine the ceremonial things we get involved in. So next weekend, Remembrance will be a busy time for us. We had Battle of Britain recently as well. We teach lessons. We offer courses in things like listening skills, you know, all the sort of soft skills that are quite important to people. Stress management, things like that. We get involved with people when they return from operations. They spend a day with us. We prepare people for going away on operations. We help and look after their families whilst they were away from home. We stand in the gap sometimes where nobody else is prepared to stand. So maybe if somebody's got an issue going on in the workplace, or maybe they've got an issue in the family life, you know, we have this privileged opportunity just to be in that space and to help people work through it. And so when I read this story of the sick woman and the dying girl, I see woven links in with chaplaincy. And again, I wish I had more time to explore it with you. But we've essentially got Jesus at the height of his ministry being squeezed out by the crowd. You know, his interest had got so much in him. And he was doing wonderfully this job of signposting people towards God. You know, there's a kingdom coming, folks. There's a new covenant here on the horizon. And so he generated around him this sense of interest. And so people wanted to be near him. And there he is, he steps off the boat and walks through, and there are crowds pressing in. And in the middle of that comes a man, Jairus, who's a ruler of the synagogue, an important man, a man with a lot of responsibility, would have been held in high regard in the society. And he falls at Jesus' feet and he says, "Please come, my daughter's ill, I want you to help." And Jesus, in that moment, says, "Yes, I'll come." He has a mission, he has a purpose, he has a direction he's going to follow. And whilst he's en route to Jairus' house, following that mission, something happens. A woman, unnamed, unknown, unclean, reaches out and touches the hem of his cloak. And Jesus feels power leave him, and so he stops. And he turns around and he says, "Who touched me?" Now, he could have quite easily just moved on, known that the woman had been healed. He could have quite easily just left her to one side, thinking, "Well, that's her sorted. I'm off in this direction." But no, he chose to stop, and not only to ask the question, "Who touched me?" but to wait until she identified herself and stood up in front of the crowd. And so all the energy of that scene that was moving towards Jairus' house is suddenly focused on this woman. She'd been suffering with bleeding for 12 years. Interestingly, the same amount of time that Jairus' daughter had been alive. And she touched Jesus' cloak. Her bleeding would have meant that she was marginalized, not able to worship in the synagogue that Jairus was responsible for, not able to be in public places around other people. So for 12 years, she's lived in the shadows. So no wonder she just wanted to discreetly touch the hem of the cloak. But now all attention is on her. "Who touched me? I felt power go from me." And he forces her out of the shadows to a place where she has to admit who she is and what's gone on. And then in front of the whole crowd, he says to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you." And actually, the Greek translation, I wasn't very good at Greek when I was training to be a minister, but I do remember this. The Greek translation for healed comes from the root word sozo. And it's a deep word, a word that speaks very much not just of physical healing, but of deliverance, of salvation. of being brought to the fullness of God. And so in that moment, not only does Jesus see that she's physically healed, but he sees that she's restored to her place in society. He announces and encourages her to declare that she is now well. And then he offers her God's peace before he moves on. And by this time, word gets back to the group that it's too late. You know, this little distraction is probably left it too late now. The daughter's died. There's no need to come at any haste. But that doesn't bother Jesus, because he knows that God's time is the right time. And so he continues on with his original mission. And we all know that that does have a happy ending when he eventually reaches the house. There's so much in that reading. There's a lot about a sense of purpose, of mission, of needing to have a direction to follow, but being open to the promptings of God on the way. Holy distractions, I like to call them. And that's something that sits well with chaplaincy. That's about walking with people in their pain, helping them to understand what restoration means to them. And there's something too about the simplicity of offering God's peace into the hearts of those who desperately need it. And for me, there's something incredibly powerful about Jesus' example of not relying on the physical indicators for how well things are going. God's time is the right time. And so if something is in accordance with God's will, it will come to pass. It might not be how we imagine it, or see it, or in the time frame that we've set for it, but God will ensure it happens. And so as we gather around this table today, let's ponder these things in our hearts. And so if you're in need of healing or restoration today, then may you find it in outstretched hands as you receive bread and wine. If you're in need of God's peace, then may it be communicated to you through these elements. And if you need a sense of God's purpose, then may he bless you with a vision of his will for you as you come forward in faith. Amen.